I talked about this situation with Steve Moore, our economist guest that joins us frequently on Fridays here on the morning show on KVI. But it's what's happening in Congress right now. It's kind of the next big ticket item that Congress needs to address. It has to revolve around whether or not to extend Trump first administration tax cuts. And that's what the Republicans, now in control of the House and the Senate in Congress, want to do. And the negotiations are ongoing. Joining me to talk about all this is the president of the of American Commitment, Phil Kirpin. And Phil Kirpin is a colleague of folks like Steve Moore and the Committee to Unleash Prosperity. So, Phil Kirpin, welcome to Talk Radio 570 KVI. Thanks for being on with us in Seattle to talk about this.
Yeah, absolutely. My pleasure. And I would like to nominate Take It on the Run by REO Speedwagon.
Ooh, for great. Great suggestion for the Throwback Thursday theme. Okay, I've seen that one coming in on the text line, so I hope that my producer, Zach Wildfang, is probably working on queuing that one up. But, Phil, great addition. Thank you for participating here, unprompted even, on Throwback Thursday.
Yeah, so, my pleasure.
Yeah.
So, and I do work with Steve pretty closely, so
yeah.
We do the daily newsletter. If people don't get that, unleashprosperity.com. I'm the guy who writes the first draft the night before that Steve then completely rewrites in the morning. So that's,
he steals all your good ideas and takes credit for them, right? So Phil Kirpin,
he improves them, but yeah,
oh, okay.
And it goes under his name, so he's allowed to have the final word.
Phil Kirpin here is joining me, president of American Commitment, and the phrase that is kind of denoting this congressional bill in the United States House, and then ultimately what goes to the Senate, is what Trump keeps referring to as the big, beautiful bill. But in short, it all revolves around extending Trump-era tax cuts. But you've been looking at a portion that's a little bit more specific, and it's called the REINS Act, R-E-I-N-S, REINS Act. But what you've been looking at that makes this bill significant and important is how it deals with repealing all kinds of regulations or putting a check and balance on so many of these regulations that end up becoming a burden and a barricade to the expansion of business and commerce and ultimately the economy.
Yeah, this is pretty amazing, and you're right. The kind of the big pieces that everyone's waiting to see are the Ways and Means title, which is where all the tax provisions will be, and of course that's got most of the focus, and the Energy and Commerce Committee title, which will have any changes to Medicaid, which have been contentious, and we can get into that if you want. But most of the other committees have already produced their work, and I think they're going to actually call it the Big Beautiful Bill Act of 2025, which is kind of funny for the name of a bill, but no one suggested anything better, so I think that's likely what they'll call it. But this is going to have a title in it basically from every committee. And so they're all working on stuff. There's going to be stuff from the Natural Resources Committee opening up a bunch of federal lands and privatizing things and stuff like that. And there's going to be a title from and basically every committee up there has a title. The Agriculture Committee has a title. Every committee up there has a title. And the Judiciary Committee title is very interesting. It has a lot of changes to immigration, raising a lot of fines and stuff like that, which has got some attention. But the Judiciary Committee also put in major regulatory process reforms. And in my opinion, this could end up being bigger and more of a positive for the economy in the long run, even than the tax title, which is a pretty big thing to say, because I think the tax title is going to be quite good. But it's included in the Judiciary Committee title for the Big Beautiful Bill is a bill called the REINS Act that I've been trying to pass for, I don't know, 15 or 20 years at this point. 15 years, I would say, because it goes back really to the Tea Party movement. It's unfinished business from the Tea Party movement. And there's an amazing origin story to this. A guy named Lloyd Rogers, a Navy veteran, former local elected official, retired guy. He's actually passed away about a year ago now, so he won't get to see his bill enacted into law, but maybe we can get his son at the bill signing. But he went to his congressman. Remember in summer 2010 when the town halls were roiling the country over Obamacare? Or 2009, I guess it was, when the town halls were going crazy. He went to his congressman's town hall back then, summer 2009. It was a Republican congressman named Jeff Davis. He's no longer in Congress. And Lloyd brought his water bill, and he brought his United States Constitution. And he walks up to his congressman. He says, "Congressman, my United States Constitution right here, Article 1, Section 1, says all legislative power is vested in a Congress. But my water bill right here says that the EPA stormwater management rules are doubling the water bill for everyone in these three counties in northern Kentucky, including our county here in Campbell County. Explain to me how the EPA can double my water bill without you, my congressman, ever voting on it if you have all the legislative power. And his congressman sort of sputtered. And
probably didn't have an answer, right?
You're right. We should have
voted on
that.
I don't know how that happened.
Correct.
Well,
you're correct. Yeah. That's something we should have voted on. And he went back and he got this bill developed with his team called the RAINS Act, which basically says any regulation that has a significant economic impact, or the current version they said has a significant budgetary impact, but those are the same thing, because if it affects the economy, it'll affect the federal budget. But they had to write it that way because this is a budget bill. But basically, any regulation of any significance, the agency can't just put it into effect. They have to send it up to Congress as a proposal, and Congress has to vote on it. It's got to get a majority in the House and the Senate in order to be enacted. And so, in other words, for major regulations, if this passes, for major regulations, we'll actually follow the legislative process, and they have to command majority support before they can take effect. I think this would be a total massive sea change. In effect, if we got this passed, what you would have is a regulatory freeze. You would have no new major expensive regulations unless they actually got a vote in Congress that approved them. And, of course, Congress can do dumb things, so I'm sure we'd still get some dumb regulations. But, boy, we'd be able to stop the worst of the worst, and we'd at least have a chance. Even when the Democrats control everything, we'd at least have a chance of bringing political pressure to bear and stopping some of them. And the ones that we don't stop, you'd be able to look up who voted for them and hold them accountable come election time. It wouldn't be an all-or-nothing vote on the presidency and everything swinging like a wild pendulum every 4 years. And so I think this is a huge landmark watershed reform if they can actually get it passed. They do have it in the House version of this bill. There's some question whether the Senate rules will allow it to stay in the bill or whether the parliamentarian will say that it's not allowed in the budget process. But Heritage just recently put out some research, very high-quality research.
Heritage Foundation, the think tank?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, from Bill Beach, who was the former director of the Bureau of Labor Statistics. And they said that a freeze on regulations, which is essentially what this is, because to get a regulation, Congress would have to vote, and then you could sort of look at the costs associated with that on a one-by-one basis going forward. But they found that a freeze on new regulations would reduce the federal budget deficit by $1.1 trillion over the next decade for the simple reason that we would have a much bigger, more productive economy, which is generating more tax revenue, fewer people on government programs and dependency because you have more economic prosperity. And so you have more money coming in and less money going out. And so regulatory reform is budgetary in nature, has a huge impact on the federal budget. And so I think there's a very good argument for keeping this in the reconciliation bill. And I'm really hoping that, you know, we'll get this key piece of unfinished business from the Tea Party done this year.
Talking to Phil Kirpin, he's president of American Commitment. He's been evaluating, scrutinizing what's going on with Congress and what President Trump continues to refer to as the big, beautiful bill. But Phil Kirpin's looking at the regulatory aspects of all of this. And it's kind of described, the word or the act name that you're talking about is the RAINS Act, R-E-I-N-S, about regulations. And does this play into the Supreme Court ruling from a year or two ago that basically managed to throw out all these regulations and regulatory decisions that the EPA and other government agencies could make that had nothing to do with Congress? It was called Looper Bright Enterprises versus Raimondo?
Yeah, I think, you know, the end of Chevron deference, first of all, those decisions in Looper Bright and Relentless were correct, and Chevron was wrongly decided, in my view. This idea that the agencies are so expert that they should decide what their own powers are that we've been living under for, you know, for the 40 years after Chevron until last year.
Yeah, I guess this ruling was just almost 1 year ago. It was June 2024.
It was very destructive for the country, the Chevron doctrine. And so I was very happy to see that overturned. But, you know, if Congress does nothing and just says, oh, problem solved, the Supreme Court fixed this, then what you have is instead of agencies making most of these decisions, it's judges that'll decide the extent of regulatory powers. And, you know, that's an improvement on the agencies doing it. And to the extent that things go all the way to the Supreme Court, you probably get favorable outcomes in the current environment. But really, we want Congress making these decisions because that's the way our constitutional design is. And those are the people we get to vote for every 2 years in the case of the House and hold them accountable. And they're subject to pressures from the public. And so I think that that decision was correct and welcome. But if we don't do anything else, if we just say, OK, problem solved, we're kind of replacing, you know, being ruled by unelected bureaucrats with being ruled by unelected judges. And I'd rather Congress make those decisions. Yeah, so I'm hoping that we can get that done.
You had used the word pendulum a little bit earlier, and that's something I always look at, and it happens kind of locally in Seattle. It happens at the state level particularly, but it's a big part of presidential politics now. Biden gets in after Trump. Trump gets in after Biden. They do an executive order that reverses the last thing that the last president does. And if this doesn't get pinned down to something specific in Congress, then you just end up with that back and forth where one president comes in and then just guts what the previous one did. And that's the pendulum just swinging back and forth. But we don't really get any consistency or transparency to it. It's just the whim of an executive order.
Yeah, and this is definitely what we saw. You know, under Obama, I thought it was going to be the most expensive, you know, regulatory president ever. And, you know, Trump rolled back so much of what he did. Trump was actually a net deregulatory president, which is something we hadn't seen in a very long time. But Biden came in and did put back all the Obama rules and then some. Biden, by the estimate we have at Unleash Prosperity by Casey Mulligan from the University of Chicago, Biden, in his 4 years, put $47,000 of regulatory costs on the average household on a that's a net present value basis. So that's basically the amount of money you'd have to put away today to cover the, you know, the lifetime costs of new regulations. That's a lot.
Cost of doing business. That's what it becomes, a cost of doing business.
It's enormous. And of course, you know, Trump is now even being more aggressive than he was in his first term. Remember, in his first term, he had a rule that for every one new regulation, you had to get rid of two old ones. Well, this time he says you have to get rid of 10 old ones. And so he's actually being much more aggressive on deregulation. But if we don't change the process, if we don't change the rules, then the next Democratic president could bring it all back and then some again. And so this idea of saying, wait a second, let's put Congress in the process. Let's use, you know, Congress is so good at one thing, right? They're good at gridlock, okay? If the important and expensive economic decisions have to go through Congress, then gridlock works in our favor. If the most important economic decisions are made in the agencies, unless Congress somehow gets their act together to stop them, then gridlock works against us and really harms us when Democratic administrations are in. So this process fix of forcing regulations to go through Congress would be hugely beneficial of solving this pendulum swinging problem, because only the rules and regulations that have enough merit to get majorities in the House and Senate would actually get through and implemented, and we'd be much more likely to get fewer regulations and better regulations and more stable regulations.
Talking to Phil Kirpin here, he's the president of American Commitment, and this all revolves around the work going on in Congress for what President Trump calls the Big Beautiful Bill. We're kind of talking specifically about a regulatory function and how to make it more the focus of what Congress does rather than unelected bureaucrats or agencies and things like that. So, Phil, the timeline that I've been hearing about is that the House, the Senate, and Congress in Washington, D.C. hope to get this ironed out and maybe get something passed in June or July. Is that what you're hearing?
Well, you know, the president said he wanted it by Memorial Day. Okay. That now looks very unlikely.
Yeah. 2.5 weeks.
We were supposed to see the, you know, I mentioned the two biggest, most contentious titles of this bill are the Energy and Commerce title, which is the one that will have Medicaid reforms, and the Ways and Means title, which will have all the tax provisions. Those are the only two we haven't seen yet. Okay. Those are still being negotiated. And, you know, we got the other committees did their work last week. We thought we were going to get these last two committees this week. It looks like we will not. And so it's slipping. There's no question it's slipping. They're having difficulty coming to consensus on that work. And remember, when they do come to consensus and put this House package together and pass it, there's the issue of the Senate, which is known to take its time as well. And so I think at this point we'll probably get a House product sometime in June. And then the question is, you know, can the Senate take that up and pass it, or will they do their own thing and have it go back to the House? If the House passes something that the Senate can pass, then it's possible we get something by July 4th or so. If the Senate has to go and do its own thing, and then we have back and forth between the bodies, then doing it by the August recess or the end of July becomes the best case scenario. And unfortunately, it maybe becomes more likely they don't get that done and it slips into the fall. And that's the scenario I'm really, really
worried
about.
And then you get
about.
Up against the end of the fiscal year on September 30th.
It gets mixed up in that. Yeah. And then if they say, wait, we're going to put this on hold until we resolve appropriations, then you're, next thing you know, it's December.
Yeah.
And, we got to get it done before we get out of town for Christmas. And that's what happened in 2017. They didn't get the tax bill done until, you know, the week before Christmas. And none of the benefits of it were felt by Election Day. And it was a terrible election for Republicans. And so we're hoping that they remember that experience and they get themselves on the same page early. And if you really want to know the true nightmare scenario is that Republicans never form a consensus. We get to December, you still have a bunch of fractured groups in the Republican Party, and they end up doing a deal with Democrats instead.
Oh.
And then you don't even want to think about how bad the thing looks.
Excellent insight there, Phil. Thank you for putting that in perspective about how the ultimate process finally gets finished at the congressional level. Phil Kirpin, president of American Commitment, thank you for jumping on with me to talk to us about the big, beautiful bill and specifically what you were talking about, the regulatory concerns you've got and how that gets handled between Congress and the bureaucracy. Thanks a lot, Phil. We'll be in touch, okay?